This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Michael Monks. How are your lawn and garden looking right now? Are the weeds popping up? What do you use to remove them? Hand tools, chemicals, natural substances? Also, some area trees may not look too healthy right now, so when is the right time to prune or even to cut down? We've got a full hour of gardening tips, and it starts right now. Joining Cincinnati Edition today are Turner Farms Community Garden Manager Joshua Jones. Welcome back, Joshua. Madison Tree Care and Landscaping Vice President John Butcher. Welcome, John.
Hi.
And Boone County Cooperative Extension Horticulture Extension Agent David Kester. Welcome back, David.
Thank you.
Join the conversation. Call in with your questions or comments about the issues or successes you're seeing in your lawn garden. What do you use to get rid of weeds? When do you think it's time to take care of an ailing tree? Call us at 513-419-7100. You can also email talk at wvxu.org or find us on Facebook or Twitter. We'll look for your comments and your tweets and try to get some of those in the show as well. So let's start with something that I think always fires up our audience in some way, and it's when you're dealing with unwanted growth in your landscape or your garden. And so when we talk about weeds occasionally on the show, depending on who's on the panel or what their preference is, they might mention a product like Roundup or something that uses chemicals to get rid of these. And then we'll get some emails or some calls from people say, don't use that. Don't use that. It's dangerous. What's the verdict here? What do we think is the best approach? David, let's start with you. What's the best approach to dealing with these weeds?
Well, obviously, it depends where they are. But if they're in your landscape beds, I think really the best way is just go in there early, get a clean-free bed, go ahead and pull those weeds out, and then you can put a new layer of mulch down. And hopefully those weeds will be gone. And, you'll get a few coming up here and there. But for the most part, you can do it that way without the chemicals. And then, of course, if they're in your lawn, one of the things that I think is best for lawn weed control is your lawnmower. Make sure that you cut frequently enough that you keep anything from going to seed. And then maybe deal with some individuals, possibly with some chemicals, things like that. But for the most part, I let my lawnmower do a lot of the weed for me.
And Josh, what are your thoughts on the natural versus chemical argument?
Well, I think there's always a multifaceted approach. I start with trying to avoid using chemicals. Like Dave said, hand weeding is going to go a long way. It is a painstaking process, but the results typically are the best, and it's the most inexpensive way. And then I'll move on to things like corn gluten, I think is a great way to stop these young seeds from, they'll germinate and that corn gluten will typically take them out. I've been using a lot of flame weeding these days, especially before we've planted our beds, while they're still bare from wintertime. A flame weeder is basically just a giant blowtorch, and you can buy these at any big box big box hardware store. I've seen them. It hooks up to the propane tank that your grill uses, so you already have one of those most likely. And essentially, you go and you quickly put flame to these small weeds, and it ruins the cell structure, and they'll shrivel and die within a couple of days.
Okay, so how do you do that without harming what might be near it?
I always recommend this at the beginning of the season as your first kind of weeding attempt. And what that does, it'll set the tone and reduce your weed pressure at the beginning, so it's more manageable by hand later on. So I do this before any other plants are established. If I have perennials in the bed, then I just hand weed around the perennials and then flame weed large open spaces. That way you're not having to hands and knees weed every little part of your landscape.
All right, John, you deal with people's landscapes. What is your approach that you take when folks call you in to do some work?
We try to use chemicals as responsibly as possible. Just slinging chemicals everywhere to solve every landscape problem is not the right approach. We've switched over actually last year with Joshua's guidance a little bit, and we're using flame torches. We're using vinegar and Epsom salt solutions. We're doing just lots of different things to manage without only using chemicals. But chemicals are still part of what we use and target problems. So,
do you have customers who say, please don't use any chemicals? We want all natural.
Absolutely.
What's the general concern from consumers about chemicals? It's something they've read on the internet, or are there valid reasons?
I think that there's just uncertainty with the chemicals, and whether the Roundup issue is a real thing or it's something that people are just all in panic about because of the media and the lawsuits that have just come out. It's still something that we just don't really know. And I think that most people know that vinegar is not the worst thing in the world to use, and they're not going to get hurt with a flame torch, at least as far as chemical residue, although there are other restrictions. When you're using a flame torch, you have to really worry about catching things on fire. And it's not something that I would just release to everyone to do and say there's no concern here. So I think we have to be a little bit careful with whatever approach we take.
David, what kind of weeds are we dealing with right about now that might be springing up?
Well, obviously, dandelion, of course, you're going to see that. You're getting a lot of your everything that's kind of overwintered a little bit, either as a seed or some of the perennial weeds. We've got pokeweed is really coming up in my garden. Lamb's quarters has started. A lot of different things are out there, and you're going to see them. I mean, we've just had perfect weather. It's been cool, and it's been plenty wet, and so everything's starting to germinate and starting to grow.
So a dandelion's a weed.
Oh, it is a weed.
What, am I wrong in thinking it's a pretty flower?
Well, a lot of people do, and if you know, some I always thought, you know, if you ever see a lawn that is completely covered with dandelion blooms, it is beautiful, and it's uniform, but when you have them spotted here and there, it's kind of a mess. And it's, you know, it's one of those weeds that I can't remember how many seed is in each one of those seed heads, but it's thousands. And each one of those is going to fall somewhere and germinate.
What are the ones where that you'll blow the little white?
That's the dandelion.
That's the dandelion. Yep. Then what's the yellow one I'm picturing?
That's the young dandelion.
Oh, that's what that turns into.
It's
this is why I have no business hosting a gardening show. And yet we do this every month and we all have a great time.
That's what we're here for. You.
Yeah.
There is another yellow weed, lesser celandine, that's taking over the region. It's amazing how fast it's spreading, and it's got a waxy leaf, and it's really low to the ground, and it's already done blooming now. And when it gets warm, it'll just go away, and you won't see it. But it is literally taking over the world as we speak. I've never seen anything spread so fast.
Okay, I just want to back up for a moment because my mind is kind of blown here on the dandelion situation. So what you're telling me is the dandelion starts with the pretty bloom and then it turns into the white thing
that's its pollinated form. So that's it's basically been the yellow flower has been pollinated and then the white puffball is its seed dispersal mechanism. So each one of those individual white kind of it looks like almost like a small umbrella with a seed attached. That's how it disperses its seeds. So you get thousands of dandelions in your yard.
But I love being the seed dispersal method for those things. Should I not be blowing those things around?
The one good thing that I like to point out with dandelions is, yes, they are unsightly in a uniform turf lawn. But they're the first major food source for bees, which, you know, we know about the bee epidemic happening right now with us losing lots of hives and colony collapse. And that can't be necessarily attributed. We don't know exactly what's causing that. But herbicides are definitely being linked and thought to be the cause, at least the partial cause. So, yes, having a uniform lawn is very important, but bees pollinate the majority of our food source. So I always like to tell people, you know, if you are going to spray your dandelions, be responsible in the way that you spray them. After 6 p.m., our pollinators and our foragers are typically inside at home. That is when you should be spraying your dandelions. That way you're not... a bee is not pollinating that poisoned flower and then bringing it back to the hive.
See, I'm admiring the dandelions. You're taking fire to them. I don't know.
I'm leaving my dandelions personally.
Okay.
I don't mind them.
Well, I learned something new today that seems very basic in science, but I'm excited to have learned it nonetheless. So 513-419-7100 is the number to call. Let's go to the phones. We've got Sylvia on the line. Hey, Sylvia.
Hi.
What's your question or comment?
My solution for getting rid of weeds is boiling water. Either I'll take like an electric teapot and boil some water and then go outside and just pour it directly on the area, you know, with the weeds. Or I'll use a wallpaper steamer with a small attachment, and that way I can get a lot more boiling water and go out there and just hit them directly. Works really well. They don't come back.
Just some hot water?
Yep, boiling water.
Wow.
Boiling water or steam. Uh-huh.
Great advice, Sylvia. We appreciate your call. Okay, that was Sylvia's advice. Just boiling water, is that something that works?
It'll work.
It'll work.
It does the exact same thing that the flame weeder does, but probably with a little harder to implement, but a little bit safer, as John said. That way you're not catching things on fire.
Yeah, so safer, but maybe harder to target where it's going.
That, and you have to keep continually boiling water, going back in and out of the house. I'm sure that would take a little bit longer to administer than walking around the yard.
I don't know why people don't just live in apartment buildings. It just makes so much more sense. Let's go back to the phones. We've got Danny on the line. Hey, Danny.
Hello.
What's your question or comment?
Hi, I have a black cherry tree in my backyard that is covered about 40% with black knot fungus. And I'm looking for the best way to treat it. I'd like to avoid pruning if possible, since it would be quite an extensive process with the height. But I've been advised to use 70% neem oil. What is your suggestion?
Boy, black knot is, I'm trying to, there are some sprays for it. This must be a fruit-bearing tree.
No.
It is not a fruit-bearing tree, but it's a plum tree.
Correct.
Okay. Black knot is a really contagious disease, and really the pruning, you're almost going to have to prune some of that black knot out of there, and you need to destroy it carefully. I wouldn't leave it around the base of the tree or anywhere on your property. It's one of those things that you want to get rid of. And there are sprays for it. I don't know how practical that is for you. We also have some plum trees that are resistant to it. And, you know, this is something that you're probably going to fight on that tree from here on out. And it may be something that you might want to possibly get rid of that tree and plant something else in that area.
All right, Danny, thanks so much for the call. Anybody else want to weigh in on the black fungus situation?
Well, I would like to say that I agree with David that I think if you're talking about 40% infestation, that removal and replacement is probably your best bet at that point.
Well, we want to hear from you. What are your questions about weeds and how to get rid of them? What are your solutions? What are your thoughts on the matter? But what else is going on in your lawn and garden right now? What are your questions or tips? Well, we've got our experts here. The number is 513-419-7100. We'll have more with this panel coming up in just a moment. You're listening to Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. Thanks for listening to Cincinnati Edition On Demand. Did you know you can have the show delivered straight to your smartphone every day? Just go to your favorite podcast listening app, search Cincinnati Edition, and subscribe. You'll be able to keep up with all our great conversations with newsmakers, public officials, and other interesting people from the greater Cincinnati region and beyond on the go, anytime, anywhere. It's great for those days you can't tune in to catch us live. Weekdays at noon on 91.7 WVXU. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Michael Monks, and today we're learning about dandelions. We continue now with our full hour of expert lawn and gardening tips. We're joined by Turner Farm Community Garden Manager Joshua Jones, Madison Tree Care and Landscaping Vice President John Butcher, and Boone County Cooperative Extension Horticulture Extension Agent David Kester. 513-419-7100 is the number to call. Talk at WVXU.org is our email. Join us on Facebook or Twitter as well. We'll find your comments and your tweets and get some of those in the show as well. We got a full list of people ready to chat with us on the phone. But first, Josh, you had referenced something earlier when we were talking about getting rid of weeds. You said corn gluten, and we got a question about that. What is it? Where can we get it?
So corn gluten can be found at a lot of different nurseries and landscape stores, landscaping stores. I'm sure your big box hardware stores also carry it. Essentially, it's what they call pre-emergent. It allows plants to germinate, but once the plant germinates and it's a very small young plant, it basically nitrogen burns them and kills that small plant from emerging into a larger weed. So a lot of people will use this. They'll put it down on their landscape before they mulch, and it's just a way to keep the weed pressure down over the season.
And that's something that you can get at retail?
It's pretty readily available.
We got a tweet from Marty who says they put down wet cardboard in their flower beds, and then they put the mulch on top of that as a way to combat weeds. Is that something you're familiar with?
Sure. A lot of times that works out really well. A lot of people don't like the way the cardboard looks, so they'll cover it with mulch, and you just have to remember that when you cover it with mulch, an organic mulch, it's going to start to break down a little bit, and so is the cardboard. So you may create a pretty good environment for weeds to grow in that, but it'll give you a good several months of protection from weeds, and probably a good idea.
513-419-7100 is the number. Back to the phones. Now we have Rebecca on the line. Hi, Rebecca.
Hi.
What's your question or comment?
my husband and I were learning permaculture, and we're trying to make our yard as edible as possible while also supporting the natural life around it. And I guess I'm interested in the definition of important when just a few minutes ago you mentioned that uniform lawns are important. I would like to know in what way are they? Because we kind of look at the average grass as a weed as opposed to a dandelion. So, I'll take my comment off here.
Thank you, Rebecca. Josh.
So what I mentioned that, so a lot of people think aesthetically a uniform lawn is very important. As far as ecologically, I do not feel as though it's important. It's just an what people prefer aesthetically. And this happened around the beginning of the 20th century. Turf became the popular thing for all subdivisions and houses and things like that. But ecologically, it really has little to no importance. I would argue that tearing up your lawn and creating a very biodiverse ecosystem in your lawn and removing the turf would be the best way to go ecologically. But again, aesthetically, people like those perfect uniform turf lawns. So really, it's just not mine, but a personal preference that people carry.
And a lot of people live in subdivisions. And when your neighbor, you know, you are under pressure to have a pretty nice looking lawn and not let it all go to weeds and go to seed. And the real estate people tell us that it really can increase the value of a home by substantial amounts. So it does help to have a good looking lawn out there. And turf grass, it's better than mud, and it can help particulate matter and things like that. It is good ecologically in some cases, not as good as trees, but it is good to have the soil covered.
John, I imagine that the suburban subdivision keeping up with the Joneses mentality must be good for your line of work.
Absolutely. But I would like to say that I think we just need to look at a cultural shift and a way we change our thinking about what is a good yard and what is a good lawn. And actually, when I see a perfectly green lawn, I'm thinking I'm walking through a bunch of chemicals right now to do my job every day that people are pouring down. And that's their decision to do it. But I actually prefer the lawns that do have weeds and have violets and have dandelions and have lots of other things in them. And to me, if I can mow it and my kid can play on it, it's a great lawn, and I don't need all the perfectly uniform turf to be happy with what's going on.
That's two votes for dandelions, just for the record now, if you're keeping
your
score.
Your HOA will hate you, but the bees will love you.
513-419-7100. Back to the phones. Debbie's on the line. Hi, Debbie.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Absolutely.
About mulch.
Okay, go ahead.
So there's all kinds of mulch. First of all, do I really need it? It seems like everybody feels pressure to do it in subdivisions. Does it really serve a purpose? Can I get by without it? And I've heard that straw mulch, which is really pretty, can be flammable.
Okay. We'll hang up and let the panel answer. So she's asking about whether mulch is necessary, and then she had a question. I think she said straw mulch. Okay. Who wants to take that?
Mulch is not necessary. It just really does help. It keeps the soil around your plants a little bit cooler. It'll, of course, you won't get weeds up in it. And it can also keep the moisture in the ground for a good while. It's not mandatory, and you can certainly grind up some leaves and things like that and use that as mulch. Grass clippings can be used as mulch as long as they're not haven't been treated with a lot of herbicides. And so you don't have to go and buy the mulch. You can use some of the material that you have around your house. It's your preference.
I think we're going to get a lot of calls from high school bands saying, oh, yes, mulch is necessary. Now, please buy some bags from us at our fundraiser on the corner. Go ahead, John.
In our managed landscape scenarios, we're pulling all of the organic matter that would normally fall back down into the beds and create the organic layer and nutrient cycle needed for our plants to be healthy. And so what mulch is actually a way to replenish that and make it look very neat and uniform, which is something that people like a lot. I actually prefer the whole wood chip mulch that comes out of the back of the truck after pruning a tree or removing a tree, and that actually is proven to be a much better mulch for plant performance and soil biodiversity than any other mulch we could put down. And I think that's something that I would really like to see more of.
Well, she also had the question about straw mulch.
Yes, straw mulch can be very flammable. I actually had an issue with this at one of our community gardens. It does dry out, and if we have a drought period, it will dry out. And
especially if you're running around with a blowtorch all over the place.
Exactly. So I always kind of warn people about using straw mulch, especially if they want it for the purposes of flower beds and landscaping beds. I think the hard wood chip mulch is definitely the way to go, and I agree with everything that Dave and John said. It's not necessary, but it really will make life a little bit easier, and it'll make your plants a little bit happier along the way.
513-419-7100 is the number. Ben is on the line. Hi, Ben.
Hi, how are you guys today?
We're all very well. How are you?
I'm just fine. I've got a comment and then a question. My comment is about the lady who called about the black knot disease. We had a flowering plum tree that we had purchased from Natorps, and it got the disease, and they sent out an arborist. And he said, you know, there's really no spray that will take care of that disease. There's just too many spores. And once you get the knot on the limb, it works its way back towards the trunk, and it will kill the entire limb. And they spread really quickly. So we wound up taking the tree out and putting in a crabapple that was resistant to black knot. And according to the guy that they sent out, they've actually stopped carrying that tree in their business. So I don't know if that's still the case or not, because this has been probably about 3 or 4 years ago.
All right. Thanks for the story, Ben. What's your question?
My question is, for the last 3 or 4 years, we plant a lot of tomatoes. We have a fairly good-sized vegetable garden, and the plants tend to lose their foliage from the bottom up. I used the old Victory Garden book as my Bible to garden with. And I forget the name of this disease, but it's in the soil, actually. And it's a fungus that comes up from the bottom and will kill all the foliage. And then you have these spindly plants that they still will produce fruit, but the plant just looks awful. I guess my question to you guys is, if I put down some type of vegetable cloth before I plant and then plant, will that keep that fungus from getting on the foliage and help it last longer? And should I spray the plants with a fungicide to try to control it?
All right, Ben, thanks for the call. We'll hang up and let the panel address it.
Ben, you really just hit the that's early blight disease of tomato, and it is probably the toughest disease that we've got to control on our tomatoes in this area. And doing what you said by putting some sort of a mulch down, that helps. I always say getting rid of some of that lower foliage can also help. It's not needed to produce the tomatoes, so you can do that. And, you know, there's just – you have to have a multifaceted approach. One, I would try I think some of the newer hybrid tomatoes will carry a little bit of resistance to that disease. That helps. Your heirlooms are pretty much – they're all – will get it a little bit quicker than your hybrids will. And what else?
No, I mean, multifaceted is definitely the way to go. So a barrier like you're talking about, such as cloth, I use very thick straw mulch. I actually take the whole flake off and put it next to it. And that's the day that I plant my tomatoes. I'm trying to raise that crown of my tomato as fast as I can, so pruning off the lower leaves. Because what happens is the rain splashes the soil up onto the lower foliage, and that's how it spreads. So keeping your plants spaced apart so they're not touching is also very important. That way, if one gets it, it's not passing it along to your entire row. I start treating day one of planting with a sodium bicarbonate, which is a fancy word for baking soda, and water. And that will help reduce the fungal spores. It changes the pH of the leaf, doesn't allow that fungus to grow. And then if it continues to grow, I will actually switch to a more potent fungicide. Serenade is a great fungicide that's organically certified. That works really well. And then what else? Go ahead, John.
Well, I'd like to just mention crop rotation and moving your tomatoes to different spots. If you plant in the same spot every year, you get the fungus buildup in the soil, and I think moving around is probably a great way to add into the other things that they're suggesting.
Yeah, sanitation is critical.
Yes. And then lastly, you want to prune that foliage at the bottom off when it's diseased, but you need to make sure you're sanitizing your pruners after every single cut, or you're just passing that along to every tomato. And then lastly, Jetstar in this area is a tomato that I've grown that shows very good resistance to that early blight. When everything else in my garden had that early blight, the Jetstar was beautifully green.
If you're not an organic grower, there is a product called Daconil, chlorothalonil, and it's pretty effective against that. And sometimes if we have just the really good weather for it, I will put chlorothalonil or Daconil on a couple of times early in the season, and that just extends my harvest from those tomatoes later into the season.
513-419-7100 is the number. Let's go to Mara. Hi, Mara.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I think it's called Bishop's weed. Does that sound familiar?
Gout weed? Is that Bishop's gout weed?
Bishop's weed. It's called, my understanding is called Bishop's weed.
Is it
a like the diocese?
Is it a variegated leaf, and it's a ground cover that spreads across the ground?
Yes, okay. Yes. And I can't get rid of it. So I'm wondering if you guys I would like to get rid of it. I consider it a weed. I don't consider it a ground cover.
Okay, so you guys are familiar with what she's saying.
I know what she's talking about.
Okay, Mara, well, we'll hang up and let the panel address that, so stay tuned. All right. Give us the advice.
Well, it is really hard to control, and it takes a lot of repetition no matter the method that you use. I think short of taking a bulldozer and scraping all of the soil away, you're going to fight this over and over again. And whether it's chemical control, organic or not, you just got to keep after it.
All right. That's tough. All right. 513-419-7100. That was some really difficult news for Mara.
Yeah,
you know, I'm still stuck on the Game of Thrones. Like, you have to kill the Night King if you want all these bad guys to go away. There's one thing you've got to kill in order for it to all go away. So maybe she'll find the Bishop's Weed Night King and take care of this problem. Again, 513-419-7100 is the number. Kim is on the line and up next. Hi, Kim.
Hi. Thanks so much for taking my call.
Sure.
Our back beds are being taken over by Canada thistle. This happened a couple of years ago in the front, and the landscaper, I think, used Lontrell. So I've been reading about that, thinking maybe I could do it myself, but it looks really complicated. So I was wondering if you could tell me the best way to get rid of Canada thistle, and if it is Lontrell, can you demystify the process? Do I need to add surfactants, and how do I regulate the spray flow rate, etc.?
All right, Kim, we'll hang up and let the panel discuss. John?
Well, Lontrell is extremely effective against Canada thistle, and you can even use it over top of some other crops that are labeled for, and I would not suggest testing that unless you were really willing to risk losing something. As far as mixing
losing
it,
something, like a plant.
Like the plant.
Not like a limb or something.
Right, right. But the thing about Lontrell is it sits in the soil for a really long time, and it's definitely a chemical that you want to use very carefully and by the label and as minimal as possible, I would say, because of its the longevity of which it hangs around after you use it. And I think that you need a pesticide license of some sort to apply that, and that's not something that I could recommend how to do it without referring back to the label.
I think, too, she's going to have to buy it in a fairly large package. And I don't know, you know, it may be something that you may not want to keep around for a long time in your garage or whatever. So there may be some other things that you might be able to use, but that is a good product for that.
513-419-7100 if you want to join in. Next in line is Lindsay. Hi, Lindsay.
Hi.
What's on your mind?
Well, I've been my house was abandoned for 2 years, so I've been in steady control of trying to take it back over. In the backyard is a plant that I've always heard called Jerusalem artichoke.
Yeah.
It's these huge, huge green leaves, and I've never seen it go to seed. And I've dug them out many times, and I've gone as deep as probably 12 to 16 inches. And I was just looking if you guys had any recommendations to get rid of it, because it's everywhere.
I've actually been trying to remove a patch of Jerusalem artichokes. They're also known as sunchokes, is what you'll see on a lot, like culinarily is what they call them. It is just a very vigorous tuber, almost impossible to get out. If you leave just a minuscule piece of root, it seems to grow back. And what I've noticed is years that I actually try to pull out the tubers to fight it, they actually come back even stronger than if I just don't harvest them at all. The one good thing is it is edible, so you can actually use it in your garden. But I know it's very tall, and it spreads very rapidly. I've only heard of one effective method of completely eradicating, and that is to let hogs actually root through the soil, and they will eat that tuber in its entirety. But that is obviously not a very practical solution, even for me working for Turner Farm. So I haven't figured, I'm currently solarizing, which is just putting an opaque, a barrier to not allow sunlight to that area. And, we'll see how it works, but I don't know of anything that's going to kill out those J-chokes unless somebody else does.
I have been offered those on several occasions to put in my garden.
Stay
and
away.
I've always resisted. I have eaten them, and I can't say that it's anything that I would really have to have in my garden, so we're going to stay away from them.
Canada thistle, Bishop's weed, Jerusalem artichoke. I mean, this is why I love this show every month. I get to learn about all these exotic problems that people are having. We've got more tips, problems, issues, questions, comments coming up. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. We continue now with our full hour of expert lawn and gardening tips, joined today by Turner Farm Community Garden Manager Joshua Jones, Madison Tree Care and Landscaping Vice President John Butcher, and Boone County Cooperative Extension Horticulture Extension Agent David Kester. 513-419-7100 is the number to call if you'd like to join the conversation. John, I know we made a promise here that we were going to talk about trees today as well. And so when people are looking at their trees and wondering if it's alive or dead or whether it's time to make a move on it, what are the signs they need to be looking for?
Well, at this point, if the trees don't have leaves on them, it's probably a pretty good sign that they're not going to, at least as far as deciduous native trees to the area. There are a few things that are late to come out, crepe myrtle and other things, but you can always do what's called a scratch test, which is where you take your thumbnail on the newest season's growth and you just lightly scratch the twig. And if it's green underneath, it's alive. If it's not, it's that part of the stem's not alive. You may want to check another spot of the tree.
Let's go to the phones. We have Troy on the line. Hey, Troy.
Hello. Let's see. My comment is about trees. Or question, actually. I've got 5 adult trees, and with the straight line winds that we've had over the last few years and everything, some of my neighbors are concerned about, you know, their trees. I've seen a lot of people taking them down, and I don't want to do that. However, I've had a couple of people stop by and offered to trim my trees, of course, for a fee. But how do I know if they need it? You know, how do I know if a tree is, you know, looking at them, they look healthy. But, you know, are there things that I need to be watchful for? You know, maybe branches that are sticking out at 90 degree angles or any of that sort of thing.
Okay, Troy, we'll hang up and let the panel decide. We just discussed whether you know if your tree is dead, but if how do you know when it's time to prune?
I think the best advice right here is certified arborist. And I would look in the phone book and find somebody who is a certified arborist, and they can tell you more about your trees and whether they need anything or not. Somebody that's driving by in a truck and is somebody that I would probably avoid for the most part. But, if they're in the neighborhood, they're doing somebody else's, that does not mean that you have to have your trees done. And so I would have your trees looked at first and find out whether they need anything and then go from there.
Next up is Linda. Hey, Linda.
Sorry. Hi. This question, I'm Linda Brill. I lived on Round Bottom Road with a neighbor, John Butcher's. And we moved from a house that had huge maple trees. And now we have one tree, and it's a tulip poplar. And our neighbor's very concerned because apparently the limbs drop off of it. We haven't lived here long enough to really see that happen. But we've been told by several people that, you know, probably we need to have the limbs taken off. And I don't know anything about a tulip poplar. So if you could help me with that, I'd appreciate it, John.
All right, Linda, we'll hang up and give John a shot at this one.
Well, tulip trees, I refer to them as tulip trees instead of tulip poplars because they're not technically in the poplar family, but needless to say, tulip trees are fairly soft-wooded and may require a little bit of maintenance. And I would have it inspected by a qualified ISA-certified arborist or someone else that you really trust and not someone that just is a neighbor telling you that you need to prune it or take it down. And I think that all trees have some risk and that we need to evaluate what those risks are and find the comfort zone for the client and help them decide what's an acceptable risk level for them. And taking down every tree certainly isn't the answer.
513-419-7100 is the number to call if you've got some question. We did get a message and we talked about it during our break and we actually had to look this one up. So we got a question from Nazrin who wants to know where she can buy Clatonia virginica, also known as Spring Beauty. Saw it in bloom at Spring Grove and now wants to get her hands on some. So what did we find out in our quick internet search?
So I found out that it was an herbaceous perennial, which means it's going to come back every year. So make sure that you're committed to carrying that. It actually favors degraded soils, which is why Spring Grove Cemetery is really nice because they're always in there kind of turning the soil for their purposes, obviously. But it is a nice woodland species, so that means it can do well in full sun and in shade. Actually, where to get them, I wouldn't have the slightest clue, unfortunately. But I'm sure that if you called around local nurseries, they would either have it or they would help you track it down.
Yeah, maybe call Spring Grove. Maybe they'll give you the tip.
And their employees and they're very good about that and helping you identify the plants and locate those plants.
Next on the line is Emily. Hi, Emily.
Hi.
What's your question?
This kind of goes back to pests a little bit. It's about scale. I encountered scale for the first time last year on my tropicals and on my citrus trees, and I was able to kind of manage it with rubbing alcohol, just kind of removing them directly with rubbing alcohol and then obviously rinsing the plant. But then when I took them outside, I started getting a bunch of ants on that plant, mm-hmm. on those plants, and I found out that ants, I guess, will harvest the scale to basically feed off of their byproducts. And so once the ants moved in, it was so hard to battle against these plants. And since they're, you know, some of them are food trees and some of them, the other ones I'll bring back in my house. So I want to be careful with how I treat them. And so I tried diatomaceous earth and the ants didn't care. And I brought in ladybugs, which were, you know, immediately bullied off of the plant by the ants. So I was just wondering if you had any advice on managing scale, especially when it has ants paired with it, without just pitching the plant.
All right, Emily, thanks for the call. We'll let the panel address. So she's got scale on tropicals is what she's saying.
Yeah, the scale is your problem. I don't think the ants are really the problem. They're going to go away as soon as the scale they're feeding on the exudate from the scale. It's sweet and they like that. And as soon as we control the scale, and I have had we have a lot of lime and lemon plants that we overwinter, and they will get a lot of different insects while they're in my house for the winter. And as soon as I take them out there on the patio, predators start to come along. They take care of the scale. They take care of anything else, the mealy bugs and all that stuff. And I don't have any problem with them. And I think if you just give it a little bit of time outside, you will not have that problem.
Agreed. And I've been dealing with scale in our greenhouse this year. I tried the rubbing alcohol method with little success. I've tried pyrethrin with little success. I don't know how large your trees are. I literally went through with a scrubbing pad, like the backside of a sponge, and actually scrubbed the scale off of every single branch and leaf. And then the ants went away immediately because I was having the ants were also farming my scale as well. If it's a small tree, I really recommend that method of just rubbing it with the green side of a sponge. And then putting it outside, like Dave said, is really going to – eventually those scale will go away and your ants will then follow.
All right. We've got a few minutes left and jammed phone lines. So let's treat this like the lightning round and see who we can help out here. Let's start with Carol. Hey, Carol, what's your question?
Okay, I had something in flower beds, and I thought initially it was poison ivy because it's got tree leaves, et cetera. But then it grows high, like a foot tall or more, and it's like white flowers like Queen Anne's lace, but I know it's not Queen Anne's lace. And I pulled it out. I've sprayed it. I thought that I've had it all out. Put down that matting, you know, the landscape matting, put mulch over it. By God, if it's not up again this spring.
Well, without knowing exactly what it is, I welcome you to send me an email at joshua@turnerfarm.org with a picture of it, and then we can go from there once it's properly identified. I don't feel comfortable giving advice without properly identifying
and
the plant.
And Carol, you can check out the Cincinnati Edition link on WVXU.org and find today's post, and we've got all of their information there as well. You can reach out and send a photo, and they'll be happy to help you that way. Thanks for the call, Carol. Let's go now to Susan. Hey, Susan, how are you?
Hi, I'm fine, thank you.
All right, what's your question?
I'm wondering about all the fir trees in our yard and even my neighbor's yard seem to be dying by the bottom limbs kind of lose all their, you know, greenness, and it just kind of goes up the tree slowly till...
All right.
Till dead.
Susan, we'll let the panel address this. She's got fir trees that are apparently being killed from the bottom and wants to know what to do.
I think that she's probably referring to blue spruce trees, if I had to guess. And I'm not positive what she's referring to, but there are very few fir trees in Cincinnati or in the region in general. And what's happening is there's a fungal problem called needle cast. There's a few different varieties of this, and it's really been a big problem lately, and it's causing the needles to drop from the bottom and go up, and it's a devastating problem. If you treat the trees early before you see it, you can have fairly good success controlling it, but it's a big deal.
Yeah, so we are getting samples of that in almost on a daily basis from trees in the area, and I've sent it down to the diagnostic lab, and they've said, it's just so prevalent now.
Caroline is up next. Hi, Caroline.
Hi, how are you?
We're well. How are you?
Great. We're fortunate to have lakefront property and for a second home. And in the past, we treated it with a lawn care service, which I'm no longer comfortable doing after reading a lot about the runoff and things. And it's actually in Michigan, not in Ohio, where our normal home is, our regular home is. But I was wondering if you guys can make any recommendations for some just real simple lawn care things that would be safe for water quality.
Well, hold on. What lake in Michigan?
Elk Lake. It's up near Traverse City.
So I love Traverse City. I was hoping you were going to say Northern Michigan. That's my favorite vacation spot, too. I'll stop and visit you sometime, Caroline.
And I do struggle to find anyone up there that will do something that's like water safe. So it's either all or nothing. And this year we're doing nothing so far. So I just wanted to find out if there's anything, like I've heard Milorganite, but I know you need to be careful with amounts on that.
Okay, Caroline, we'll hang up and let the guys address that.
Well, there are obviously organic fertilizers that you can use, but that doesn't mean that they need to be running off into the water. So I would be real careful with that. And I'm just amazed that, you know, these lawns will really most of our turf grasses, and I'm sure up there you can grow bluegrass really well. And I think maybe a light application in the fall of the year, and cut it during the summer, maybe once every 2 weeks or so, and you should be fine with that.
Would not bagging it help returning those clippings to the
yard?
Yeah,
absolutely.
I would also suggest just overseeding regularly would, particularly in the fall, at least here. I'm not sure what the exact timing is in Michigan, but I think keeping a nice thick stand of grass growing is the best way to outcompete your weeds.
Yeah, it has to survive some pretty heavy piles of snow up there in Traverse City over the winter.
Thank you for being
as well.
Conscious of that, though, and not wanting to pollute that water.
Next on the line, we've got Debbie. Hi, Debbie.
Hi. I have a question about my mulch. I had put down, I'd been told that if you put newspaper down first and then put your mulch on top, that the weeds wouldn't come through. So I got this brainy idea that I would use shredded paper and then put my mulch down. And then I got to thinking, will the water even go through shredded paper to feed my plants?
Shredded paper. Okay, Debbie, we'll hang up and let the panel address that as well. We heard cardboard earlier as sort of a method, and now we're hearing about shredded paper.
I think the shred, it's fine. You know, just don't overdo it. Don't put a really thick layer down, but the rainwater should go through that. I think the reason that people use sections of a newspaper is that it's just easier to put down and it's more uniform. There are no holes going through that. And it'll, you know, the newspaper is going to decay over the course of the summer. It's going to do the same thing that every other mulch does, which is keeps the soil cool, keeps it moist.
Seems like a good upsell tactic for like Gannett or the big newspaper people. Look,
yeah, if she had shredded paper available, I would use it, but I wouldn't go through an extra process of shredding paper specifically. I think the large sheets would work just as good, if not better, than the shredded. But if that's all she has, then I think it'll work effectively.
All right, let's get to the phones again. We've got Lisa on the line. Hi, Lisa.
Hi. I read that mixing half and half water and hydrogen peroxide will increase the oxygen in the soil for the plants, using them in containers. Is that true, and is it a good thing to do?
All right, Lisa, we appreciate the call.
I've never heard that. I don't – hydrogen peroxide.
I've never heard it either.
That would scare me a little bit. I'm not aware of that one. I would really search that out a little bit before I – and if you do it or something, make sure you do it on a plant you don't like.
And typically, she had mentioned aeration. I think that you can aerating potted plants typically isn't necessary unless it's a perennial plant that stays in that pot for a very long time. And even in that case, I think I would just stick a few stakes down into the and create air holes for it to sort of aerate it. I don't think it really be necessary, especially if it's an annual plant in a pot, because you're putting all the soil in the pot over the year. It's not getting really compacted. So I don't think that you would have an aeration issue in a potted plant typically. I would, not knowing anything about the hydrogen peroxide method, I would think that there are other methods that are less risky.
So we've got about a minute left, and I'm curious for those who me have never had cause to use a pesticide or an herbicide before, and now they're thinking that they want to do that this season, that they're going to – they're either natural or chemical-based. What are the mistakes that people make when they're first trying to do this?
I would say that more is not better,
yes.
Whether it's fertilizer or whatever it is. You need to read the label and follow the rates and make sure you're putting the right product on the right plants.
Timing. I think it's just applied. Don't apply them at noon. Again, that's just protecting our pollinators. It will tell you on the label when to apply each herbicide and pesticide, and I would follow those to a T.
The label is the law,
yes.
And you are held liable for it if you use something not in accordance with what's on the label.
And then PPE, personal protective equipment. We don't often think about this. Protect yourself when you're applying these pesticides. Some are very harmful to us. So make sure you're taking those proper precautions. Again, those will be listed on the label.
If you have more questions for our panel of experts here, go to the Cincinnati Edition section at WVXU.org. Click on today's post and you'll find all of their contact information there. I want to thank Turner Farm Community Garden Manager Joshua Jones, Madison Tree Care and Landscaping Vice President John Butcher, and Boone County Cooperative Extension Horticulture Extension Agent David Kester. Thanks for being here today, guys.
Thank you.
You've been listening to Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. The producer for today's show is Pete Reitmeier. The assistant producer is Selena Reeder. The technical director is Josh Elstro. Archives online at WVXU.org. I'm Michael Monks.